This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah. وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Saudi warplanes conduct new air raids near a hospital in Yemen, leaving several staff injured. The US calls for new UN Security Council sanctions on North Korea following its recent missile tests. And the new poll suggests the majority of Americans believe US democracy is in danger of collapse. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Saudi Arabia is pushing ahead with its deadly campaign of airstrikes on Yemeni cities. The Saudi-led coalition's warplanes have conducted two air raids on the vicinity of a hospital in the Sanhan district in Sana'a province. Local media say four hospital staffers have been injured, two of them critically. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on its southern neighbor in 2015 to reinstate a friendly government there. That objective has not been achieved, but hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have been killed in the conflict. We've talked to Azhar Rajabi, a member of the anti-war coalition Mobilization Against War and Occupation. She believes that Saudi bombardments targeting civilian sites, especially a hospital, are nothing short of a war crime.
It is a war crime. This bombing is another horrific and a criminal act by the Saudi-led coalition against the people of Yemen. We also see this bombing in the midst of an escalation of attacks in the past week. Saudi Arabia has been targeting neighborhoods, water projects, communication networks in Yemen. And this is, as you mentioned correctly, are war crimes committed not only by Saudi Arabia, by the United Arab Emirates, but also their colonial powers. And I'm referring to the United States, to Canada, where I live, and other European countries. And also, it's important for us to look at this attack against the hospital and other infrastructure in Yemen are desperate. This is a desperate move by Saudi Arabia and their U.S.-backed coalition against the people of Yemen. They are going into a quagmire in the war on Yemen. The people of Yemen have showed resistance and bravery fighting against this war.
Iran criticizes the suspension of its right to vote at the United Nations, stressing that U.S. sanctions have brought about the situation. The foreign ministry spokesman says Iran is a founding and active member of the UN and considers itself duty-bound to fully and timely pay its membership fee. Said Khatibzadeh stresses that Tehran has prepared the fees and is conducting necessary consultations to resolve the issue. He has also urged the UN to take the situation of sanctions-stricken countries into account. Iran has been denied the right to vote at the UN General Assembly after failing to pay its membership dues because of the sanctions. Political commentator Keaton Mansfield says the United Nations needs to stand against Washington's pressure against other countries.
Well, you know, Iran has been involved, has been a member with the United Nations since its formation after World War II. And the UN is supposed to be an impartial international organization where all countries meet in a central location to address global political matters on a level playing field, where every person's vote, regardless of how powerful or how wealthy a country is, each vote should be worth the same amount. And so, because of the sanctions that the U.S. and international global financial institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, have levied against Iran, it's made it very difficult for the government to pay its, you know, its UN dues. And so if the UN isn't going to seriously take action to have the U.S. remove the sanctions, then the UN also can't pretend or claim that Iran has to listen to the UN. If Iran doesn't get a vote at the United Nations, then they can't be expected to be held accountable to the United Nations. And so I think it's a bigger issue of the UN needs to kind of buck up and stand up against the U.S. and the pressure that the U.S. has put on the UN General Assembly as a whole and the Security Council.
An event has been held in Lebanon to mark 6 years since the execution of Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr Baqir al-Nimr by Saudi Arabia. Mariam Saleh reports from the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
On the sixth anniversary of the martyrdom of prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr Baqir al-Nimr, who was executed by the Saudi regime, a group formed at the initiation of a union of opposition members in the Arab Peninsula held its first meeting in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Dr. Fuad Ibrahim, a Saudi opposition academic.
This occasion could be considered as a platform for a new political organization that will start to build up a political discourse and a political agenda in the coming days. And it's just a starting point for a group that has been working for a long time but without political identity.
In an address to the event, head of Hezbollah's executive council, Sayyid Hashem Safiyuddin, stressed that no power in the world can stand in the face of the voices which support the oppressed and the victims unjust rule of the Saudi family.
One thing is clear, Saudi Arabia needs to stop the policy of bullying other Arab and Islamic states. They spend lots of money against the interest of the people of the Arab Peninsula. The money is spent to hatch further conspiracies against Palestine and Al-Quds. Saudi Arabia and its allies have failed to achieve their goals in the region.
Sayyid Safiyuddin also demanded that the Saudi regime stop pumping money only to sow discord and sedition in Lebanon and across the Arab world. The Yemeni nationals at the meeting stressed that it is the time to tell the Saudis that enough is enough.
The blood of 500,000 martyrs that was shed in Yemen encourages us to do whatever in our power to liberate Mecca and Medina and get rid of Saudi rulers. We had been under Saudi aggression for 70 years, but Imam Khomeini and his support gave us the courage to stand against our enemy.
The problem of the region, the participants say, is not merely an issue of unemployment or lack of services for certain communities in the Arab Peninsula, but rather the presence of a state which meddles in other states' affairs. The Muslim clerics believe the Wahhabi ideology of the Saudi rulers is not only persecuting the people of other sects, but is also distorting the true image of Islam by spreading false ideologies. Analysts believe there is a growing conviction that the tyranny of the Saudi regime will lead to a downfall, while the people of the Persian Gulf Arab states who have endured persecution will one day find their way towards self-rule and freedom. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
North Korea's recent missile firings are drawing yet another angry response from the United States. The U.S. Treasury says it is imposing sanctions on the North over its weapons program. The sanctions target six North Koreans, a Russian individual, and a Russian firm. All are accused of procuring goods from Russia and China for North Korea's weapons. The sanctions are the first imposed by the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden. Washington has also called for new UN Security Council sanctions on Pyongyang. North Korea has conducted six ballistic missile launches since September. Washington wants Pyongyang to sit down for talks to resolve differences, but Pyongyang says Washington must stop its hostile actions before any sort of negotiations. 1 year into the storming of the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Donald Trump, a new poll shows a majority of Americans believe the country's democracy is in danger of collapse. The study, conducted by the Quinnipiac University, says 76% of Americans think political instability in the U.S. is a bigger danger than foreign threats. Over half of them also expect domestic political divisions to worsen. The poll comes as a special committee of the House of Representatives is investigating last year's deadly insurrection. The storming was meant to overturn Trump's defeat in the 2020 presidential election. Now, most of those surveyed say they support the investigation. Joining us for more analysis on that is Mike Harris, the editor at Veterans Today. Mike, it's good to see you. Yeah, the majority of Americans believe that there is a widening polarization in American society and a decline in the country's democracy. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, good morning and thank you for having me on. But the reason for the decline in confidence, and first of all, let me give you a correction. We're not a democracy. We're a democratic republic. So there's a difference. Democracy is mob rule. That's not what the U.S. is based on. But the lack of confidence in the election process is occurring because 80-plus million people watched the election that night and watched anomalies occur that had never occurred in an election before. And when Donald Trump was resoundingly ahead in certain swing states, they shut down the poll, the vote counting. They took a pause, and they restarted the next morning. And then there is these miraculous numbers of Joe Biden votes that weren't there when Donald Trump was clearly leading. Pennsylvania, I'll give you an example. They had 94% of the vote in, and they refused to call it for Trump when he was ahead by 800,000 votes. Arizona, my state, they called when only 9% of the vote was in. And so we have these anomalies, and the people do not believe the voting system any longer. We've seen ballots trucked in the middle of the night with no witnesses, no chain of custody, none of the proper procedures that ensure a fair and legal election. So we have the Democrats shout that every vote should count, but it's really every legal vote should count. And so they submitted millions and millions of illegal votes. And in addition, you have the complication with the electronic voting machine to manipulate the results by the margin that they want.
Right.
These anomalies are what has cost the trust in the integrity of the voting system here in the United States. And
right.
So many Republicans and independents overwhelmingly believe that this election was stolen from the legitimately elected Donald Trump. In addition, the down ticket races are now in question as well, because in my state of Arizona, there's documentation that every Democrat that was running in that race was given an extra 35,000 votes before the vote counting even started. So these are thin margin races. You know, Trump wins by 10 or 12,000 here. And when you give a bonus of 35,000 to the Democrat side, that's clearly cheating. And bringing votes in the middle, ballots in the middle of the night is clearly cheating. Excluding Republican poll watchers and monitors from the process is clearly cheating.
Mike, thank you very much indeed. Mike Harris, the editor of Veterans Today, joining us live out of Phoenix. Now, a study done at Kingston University has shed light on why the British government has failed to convince sections of the society to get vaccinated against COVID-19. It's about trust and it's about history, as Bianca Rahimi explains.
82% of the UK's population has been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. There is vaccine hesitancy in every community, but in some more than others. The proportion of unvaccinated people is roughly twice as high in South Asian people and four times as high among black people.
There's a long history of medical abuse in our communities. We have disproportionate impacts on medical interventions, be that sickle cell anemia, be that infant mortality in the first year of life, a whole range of conditions, vaccine hesitancy and scepticism is quite high in our community and has to be acknowledged. You can't berate people into doing the right thing.
Doctors have urged unvaccinated black and South Asian people to get their COVID jabs after new data revealed hospitalizations and deaths are higher in these groups. But there seems to be little appetite for it. More than 90% of all white people aged 50 to 54 have been vaccinated with a first dose. That compares with just 62% of those of Caribbean heritage.
To find out more, we've come to Brixton, a part of London that has a thriving Afro-Caribbean community.
But plenty of people that don't want to take it, they say they don't know what's in it. They say they don't know what's in it, and it makes some people sick. Because me, when I had it, I was off work for 2 months straight.
The community, they think Boris is just a player. He's not explaining exactly what he needs to do or what he's doing. And 1 week he changed his mind. It's a game. He's playing a game. And people are not children.
A lot of people are not taking no vaccine now. You see? A lot. For me, my kids, no. My kids, they work in the hospital. So in the hospital, probably they will tell them to take something, I don't know. But for me, no.
The black community is more likely to live in a densely populated area, work in public-facing roles such as health and social care, and live in large and multi-generational households.
The pandemic should be seen as a magnifying lens that has amplified existing disadvantage and has made that acutely aggravated. So whatever was the problems before, black and ethnic minority youth unemployment has doubled during the pandemic. That we've seen the rate of mental ill health and breakdown within our community go off the charts.
Vaccine hesitancy is not unfounded. Historical medical experiments conducted on black people remain in their psyche, far outweighing their fear of COVID-19. So now they'd rather see the vaccines tested on the white people first. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Maximiliano Herrera, watcher of extreme weather and a climatologist who has been compiling weather records for over 30 years, says last year likely to be in top 5 or 6 hottest in history. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Bibi van der Zee titled More Than 400 Weather Stations Beat Heat Records in 2021. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. According to a climatologist who has been compiling weather records for over 30 years, more than 400 weather stations around the world beat their all-time highest temperature records in 2021. Maximiliano Herrera keeps track of extreme weather around the world and publishes an annual list of records broken in the previous year. He and many other climatologists and meteorologists who follow these issues closely expect that 2021 will probably not be the hottest year in history. U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and NASA will publish their results in the next few days. But it is likely to be in the top 5 or 6, continuing the long-term upward trend. The past 6 years have been the 6th hottest on record. And according to Herrera, as is now the norm, a sheaf of new heat records have been broken. 10 countries, including Oman, UAE, Canada, the United States, Morocco, Turkey, Taiwan, Italy, Tunisia, and Dominica, broke or tied their national highest record. 107 countries beat their monthly high temperature record, and 5 beat their monthly low temperature record. A few continental and planetary records fell too. Africa had its warmest June and September ever. August brought 48.8 degrees Celsius in Syracuse, Italy, the highest temperature ever recorded in Europe. July had already brought 54.4 degrees Celsius in Furnace Creek in USS Death Valley, the highest reliably recorded temperature on Earth. But there were a few specific events that particularly stood out for experts. For meteorologist Patricia Nioro, a co-founder of Climate Without Borders and based at Kenyan Meteorological Department, the two consecutive failed rain seasons in Kenya were unusual and forced the government to organize for food aid for the first time in many years. Patricia Nioro said, "You can certainly see the effect of climate change in our weather in Kenya and globally. We're just putting together the data for 2021, but we think we will have seen an annual temperature which is 2.5 degrees Celsius higher than normal for some parts of the country. The shifts are very noticeable from one extreme to another in a very short space of time." This was one of the reasons Nero helped found CWB, a group of broadcast meteorologists and weather presenters from around the world who share information on extreme weather events. They also support weather presenters to make the connections with climate change and communicate these to the public. Meteorologist Scott Duncan, who collects data on world weather, pointed to the European summer heat waves, which broke records in a number of countries and were accompanied by wildfires around the Mediterranean. They had been preceded by a hot March, a sharp cold shock in early April, which was catastrophic for many agricultural businesses in France, and then the floods in July. Duncan said, "Those events really stood out for me." He also highlighted the heat in Alaska in December, where a number of records were broken by a large margin. He noted that was extraordinary. According to the China Meteorological Administration, the Asian country experienced its hottest ever year, but it was the rain that hit the central province of Henan that really shocked. The region was hit by more rain in 3 days than it normally receives in an entire year. Hundreds died, crops and homes were destroyed, and the cleanup continues. Jia Xiolong, deputy head of the National Climate Center, said the situation last year had been abnormal. Xiolong said warming was the main theme of China's climate in 2021. In the context of global warming, recurrent extreme weather and climate events have become the norm, which is also a major challenge to disaster prevention and mitigation. other key unusual weather events last year were the Siberian heat wave in the summer and the deep freeze in Texas in February. Nearly 200 people died, millions of homes were without power, and the fallout led to huge political rows. Guy Walton, an activist, meteorologist who has been campaigning on climate change since late 1980, said the cold outbreak in February 2021 leading to the failure of the power grid in Texas and dozens of deaths was ironically attributed to climate change by many. He also highlighted the extraordinary mild, warm fall leading to the warmest December on record for the United States. The National Centers for Environmental Information should make this official in the next couple of days. But the key event of 2021 for the meteorological and climatological community was the extreme heat wave that struck the west coast of the U.S. in June to July, led to a heat dome and broke records by up to 5 degrees Celsius in some places. At the time, Gert van der Oldenborg, who died in October 2021, of the Royal Netherlands Meteorological Institute called it way beyond the upper bound and surprising and shaking. Herrera said, of course, 2021 was full of extreme events, adding, but if I have to name one, I will name what struck every single climatologist and meteorologist in the world. Herrera nicknamed the event the mother of all heat waves. He said, I confess, I would have never believed this to be even physically impossible. The magnitude of this event surpassed anything I have seen after a life of researching extreme events in all modern world climatic history in the past couple of centuries. Moreover, Spain registered record-breaking temperatures recently, and areas of the Italian Alps are forecast to reach up to 15 degrees Celsius above the seasonal average in the coming days, as much of Europe experiences an abnormally warm start to the new year. In Bilbao, northern Spain, temperatures hit 24.7 degrees Celsius, a high not seen since record-keeping began in 1947. In Segovia, near Madrid, 22.7 degrees Celsius was recorded, the highest since 1920. And nearly, Avila reached 20.2 degrees Celsius, its highest since 1983. Robin Del Campo, spokesperson for the state meteorological agency AEMET, said, these high temperatures are not normal, adding, these are temperatures that you would normally see in the month of April. He attributed the year-end heat to a mass of hotter over Spain combined with high pressure. He noted, it's a normal phenomena that we do see. But what's strange this time is the high temperatures we're seeing. Scientists have long predicted that the climate crisis and global heating would lead to more frequent extreme weather. Although random extreme events occur naturally, the high-pressure anticyclone has shifted to France and Italy, and alpine rescuers have warned of a risk of avalanches. Luca Mercalli, a meteorologist, said, at the moment, it is about 15 degrees Celsius in areas of the Alps, at an altitude of 1,600 meters and is not hitting zero beneath 4,000 meters. It hasn't even been freezing at night. The temperature has not dropped below 10 degrees, and this is very unusual. Temperatures in some of Italy's best-known ski resorts, including Cortina d'Ampezzo and Cormeyer, were 13 to 15 degrees Celsius above the seasonal norm on New Year's Day, and the balmy weather is expected to linger until January 15th. Ski resorts at an altitude of up to 2,000 meters are bereft of snow. Mercalli said, and they can't produce artificial snow as the temperature is too warm.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Muslims in Spain. The water erupts and flows through the Alcázar Garden, part of Seville, Spain, in which the royal household is located. This place is also considered the official area of the central government. More than 10 centuries ago, Muslims ruled over this land. Abdulrahman III, Caliph of Córdoba, ordered the construction of these buildings. That was when the historical triangle of big Islamic capitals of Andalus, Córdoba, Granada came into being. Gradually, Alcázar became the center of cultural life in the city. Alcázar is also a prime example of architecture that shows the elegance of a civilization, which is still an immeasurable part of the Al-Andalus identity. This majestic example of architecture, even after being recaptured by the Christians, retained its elegance and was developed by Muslim architects once again. Outside these walls, Giralda can be seen. The mosque's minaret is adjacent to the Alcázar Castle. This minaret, which is currently being used as the Catholic Church steeple, became the international symbol of Seville City. This is one of the famous historical landmarks in the capital city, Al-Andalus.
Historically, people, academia, and politicians have always noticed the importance of the Islamic Seville in its own era. Seville played an important role, both in the time of war and peace. Even today, the name of Seville can be found in political books. There are also other proven facts, such as immigrants that can be seen in the streets or working in institutions in the city of Seville.
Every day, thousands of tourists, mostly Muslims from every corner of the globe, visit their historical heritage. They can't help thinking about the past, the time when things were better for Muslims. This statement holds true for this neighborhood and the ones on the outskirts of Seville, where many Muslim immigrants, mostly Moroccan, reside. This neighborhood has been devastated by economic strife, unemployment, and a lack of social resources. The basement of this building, which isn't easily noticed, is one of the 6 mosques in the town. Perhaps it is better to describe it as something more like a hall for the Muslim community to perform their religious rituals in. This place is located among the malls and business centers that used to thrive in the past.
Assalamu alaikum, yo soy Jihad.
Hi, I'm Jihad Sarasua from Seville, Al-Andalus. I'm a Muslim. We are in Ishbilia Mosque that we built in the Maid's neighborhood. so Muslims could perform their rituals. This is one of the popular neighborhoods of Seville, where many of us are living together. This mosque was built to meet today's needs of the Muslim community. This is all we have in this neighborhood. This neighborhood belongs to the working class, so this place is okay considering the fact that there is no business or social centers here. We have to, as Muslims, build up a community in such a poor condition. But we need a place where Muslims of Seville can get together to display the true image of Muslim communities, right? Yes, of course, we need that. We are working hard to get what we want. We need a proper neighborhood to show the splendid image of Islam in Seville.
Probably asking the municipality on behalf of the Muslim community of the city would make them grant us a loan. We could use it for Bujaira Mosque, located in Mila de Oura, Seville. We also have historical background in our favor. The constructions will be close to the Alcázar Castle, one of the greatest preserved treasures from the caliphates. There we meet Javier Fito, one of the residents of Seville, who is defending his Muslim community's right to a place where they can perform their rituals and congregations.
As far as I know, most of the mosques are in the basements of buildings. Sometimes these places get really crowded and there is also a lack of space and standard conditions. In the best case scenario, we can only have access to emergency exits. We don't even have the basic conditions here. Trying to have the right place is what we can do to make this situation better. Mosques are supposed to be social centers and community spaces, just like Catholic churches or any other social centers. We should have a better place for public use. What we have right now is still far away from what we have in mind. These places are really cramped. These buildings are not designed for religious purposes. Therefore, problems like poor standards of hygiene arise.
This is what the Muslim community has been struggling against for 25 years. These struggles started when some people in Seville who had converted to Islam openly asked for a proper mosque. While other religious communities had a better situation, they continued to struggle because they had to gather in unsuitable places to pray together.
There are some lecture halls for praying in the basements, lower floors or on the outskirts of Seville. There is no congregational mosque in spite of efforts to have one.
The idea of building this mosque became a contentious issue in the 90s. At that time, I was a member of the city council and I held the position until 2003. It all started when the Muslim community went to the municipality to get them convinced to have a congregational mosque. Well, personally, I believe that almost everyone in the municipality and political parties there liked the idea, because the idea had a sense of mutual respect and religious freedom. It's quite natural, isn't it? So, different religions can have their own place to perform their rituals. There could also be some other aspects in addition to having a mosque. At the beginning, it seemed that there was no problem with it. There were talks about renting a place for that purpose in Seville, somewhere that had traces of Islamic traditions. Everything passed so quickly and there was no result. They noticed it would be problematic to convert an old church into a mosque in the center of the city. They wanted more than that. It was more affordable to have it built in a new neighborhood. That was when they looked at Bermejal as an option, right?
This is the mosque in Seville. The only accepted and known mosque in the city that we can talk about as a mosque without any inhibitions is this one. Especially when the famous footballer Frederick Knut bought this place and gave it to Al-Ikhwan Al-Muslimun, who, after some failed attempts to build a mosque, took the initiative and managed this place.
Tomado esa, ese relevo por nosotros, lo cual, el cual
we gathered at Al-Andalus a parliament to talk it out with MPs and PSOE. Then we asked for the place, just like what other religious communities had, a place with good conditions and enough space for public use. Then we officially registered our request, and after 2 months we got our answer. We had an agreement to allot a place to the Muslim community. It was out of the city with no other buildings around, and we had no other way but to accept it. After a while, we noticed it wouldn't be that bad in the distant future. We accepted it, and we did the paperwork, and we even got the deeds and documents.
Now they had started working on the construction of this mosque on the land which belonged to the Muslim community. The responsibility was given to this young architect from Seville, and they started the project with a predetermined fund of more than 3 million euros. This mosque was supposed to be one of the biggest mosques in Europe, a building of 3,000 square meters, two floors, a capacity of more than 2,000 people, a public yard and a private parking lot. A mosque which would finally give the Muslims of this city a place to congregate. And of course, the rest of the people of Seville would be able to enjoy the modern atmosphere of the place, in which followers of different religions and schools of thought could gather to swap ideas and information.
El volumen principal, como no puede ser otra forma, es la nave que hace de oratorio.
The original structure was a ship of two floors with a dome covered by green tiles. Undoubtedly, genders are separated in accordance with the Islamic law. So the first floor would be used by men and the second floor by women. In the center, we have two hollow places leading to the dome. And in the front, we have the qibla with a somewhat upward slope to show a symbolic feature which can only be seen in a mosque. Around the main yard, we would have different services. Some of them were considered for public use and some of them more private, such as a halal restaurant, a cafeteria, a library, and a place for other cultural activities, originally designed to be used as a cultural environment for public use.
Now that we had the land, the project was presented, accepted, and funded to start. Everything was ready to end 10 years of marginalization. It was almost impossible for the growing number of Muslims in Seville to dream of a mosque, but then everything went wrong.
Soon, a rumor went around that a mosque was going to be built, something that wasn't easy to hide. It didn't seem bad or something that neighbors wouldn't like. The idea of building a mosque wasn't against the society or any other religious sects. Well, it's hard to find an old church in the city center district. It's obvious that we can't find a space in the city center. That's why the idea of building new neighborhoods came up. Normally, in an old neighborhood, the government had already monopolized the lands and any other construction activities. Everything was running smoothly until the neighbors found out about the mosque and they reacted badly against it.
The neighborhood was biased against building a mosque. Biased, yes. Most of these immigrants from the West are economically down. And in most cases, they cannot even meet their basic needs. It's not right to think of keeping the poor and the immigrants away from yourself. We shouldn't forget, not too long ago, we had the same situation when we had to emigrate to France or Germany. I think all we needed was a smile and more support instead of xenophobia.
This is Conchita Rivas. She has been the chief of the Bermejales neighborhood since it was established. She is one of the public figures against the construction of the mosque. They claim they have no intention of insulting the Muslim community. They simply prefer a medical clinic to a mosque. Today, they are passing by an abandoned land with no mosque or any other construction in the public interest.
At the beginning, it was mentioned in the press that Muslims want to build the biggest mosque in Europe. We went to the municipality for some explanations, and they said that it had already been planned and there was nothing we could do about it. I told them that Bermejales community had also a part in making decisions. We'd had other important plans on the agenda and they hadn't been actualized yet. This is why we disagreed. However, we held a referendum in Paseo de Europa Park to decide the issue. In addition, on our left side, we had a related opinion box for saying yes or no to the mosque. There wasn't even one ballot paper in the ballot box.
A partir de ese momento en el que se hace esa asamblea informativa,
then we received information indicating that anything bad could happen. We tried the idea two times and they opposed us each time. We tried to sort things out. We talked to them and we talked to the press to tell them they had no right to treat us like animals. Behind all this, there were also children at the school to whom the idea of xenophobia was indoctrinated by the neighbors. This issue was spreading nationwide. On the internet, we could see anti-mosque posts on websites from across Spain, Valencia, Madrid. We received emails and messages that had no indication of the term coexistence.
Documents and newspaper pieces are about the mosque project lawsuit, the project begun by the Muslim community. It was interesting to see the unusual presence of the National Intelligence Center at different stages of the whole issue, and both sides of the struggle mention this.
I met with two officials in the National Intelligence Center. These people were trying to convince me that I had to forget about the whole thing. But I had my goals. I have always fought against injustice, ignorance, and whatever I'd find insulting. I told them that I wasn't going to give up.
Nuestras relaciones con las con los organismos de información del Estado son directas.
We were in direct contact with the CNI itself and the CNI police. In every aspect, we were frank and direct. We had nothing to hide from the society.
After a long lawsuit, the Supreme Court voted in favor of the neighbors and the municipality was criticized for poor decision-making. Now, the municipality was trying to find a new place for the mosque. The new place was on Cartuja Island, where international exhibitions used to be held in 1992, a combination of abandoned, transferred, and constructed lands for educational and business purposes. The entrepreneurial community of Seville was the last to oppose the construction of the mosque. We chose three places, a church, a piece of land for public use in a newly built neighborhood, and a piece of land in an area for public services. Three projects, three hopes, three failures. But the Muslims did not give up. They chose another piece of land to buy in a neighborhood of San Jeromino. Once again, the neighbors took to the streets and the same scenes took place. Even some extremists buried a pig in the land chosen for the construction to make fun of Islamic law, which asserts pigs are unclean. The truth is that they wanted to stop them from building the mosque, no matter what. Finally, the whole project came to a halt.
I believe that this issue, apart from being politically motivated, was a problem of coexistence. And also another crucial factor can be the lack of understanding a civilization or a certain way of thinking. I think all these contributing factors sapped the mosque project. Personally, I truly believe that Muslims in Seville deserve a proper mosque.
It's hard to believe that a city like Seville, which was ruled by Muslims for more than 5 or 6 centuries with its Islamic background, has no place for Muslims to perform their rituals. Most of the neighborhoods oppose the idea of constructing a mosque, although more important issues can be found in these neighborhoods. We are in San Jeronimo, La Macarena. Since the time of economic crisis, this part of the city has been hit by depression. These people are losing everything. Yet, they demonstrate not against these crises, not against unemployment or their violated rights, but against their neighbors who want to build a place to do their rituals, simply because they don't understand the metaphysical values behind it. These people have no reason to stop the Muslims to build a mosque.
Whoever wants to be the Seville mayor has to know that the city needs a place to represent the Muslim community. Honestly, according to our constitution, our city deserves such a place. We will try to find another way with the help of the private sector to get this project done, and we hope to make it happen in the years to come. An unofficial census estimates the population of the Muslim community to be around 10,000, representing at least 20 different nations. Most of them are converted Spaniards, Moroccans, and others from southern parts of Africa.
In the limelight. American protesters gathered in Fayetteville, North Carolina for a second night in a row on Monday, 10th of January, after a black man was killed by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Maya Yang. The piece is titled "Fatal Shooting of Black Man by Off-Duty Officer Sparks Protests in North Carolina." American protesters gathered in Fayetteville, North Carolina for a second night in a row on Monday, 10th of January, after a black man was killed by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. The Fayetteville Police Department identified the man killed on Saturday as Jason Walker, a 37-year-old black man who the deputy told authorities jumped onto his vehicle. The Cumberland County Sheriff's Office identified the deputy as Jeffrey Hash. In a statement, Fayetteville police said a preliminary investigation revealed that Jason Walker ran into traffic and jumped on the moving vehicle. The driver of the vehicle shot Jason Walker and notified 911, it said. Jeffrey Hash, who has been with the Cumberland County Sheriff Department since 2005, was taken into custody but not arrested. On Monday, he was put on administrative leave, pending an internal investigation. By Tuesday, 11th of January, no charges had been filed. The Fayetteville Police Chief, Gina Hawkins, said data obtained from the black box of Jeffrey Hash's truck revealed that the vehicle did not impact anything or anyone, but a windshield wiper was torn off and used to break the windshield. Gina Hawkins said the weapon used by Sheriff's Deputy Jeffrey Hash was not his service weapon. She did not disclose how many shots were fired or where Jason Walker was hit. Gina Hawkins asked the North Carolina Bureau of Investigation to take the lead in the investigation. Demonstrators challenged the police version of events, gathering outside the Fayetteville Transit Authority and chanting, "What do we want? Justice. When do we want it? Now." Elizabeth Riggs, a trauma nurse, told WREL News she was on the scene and tried to save Jason Walker's life. "I did not see anyone in distress. The man was just walking home," she said. "It breaks my heart he didn't survive, and I'm trying to cope with that as well. I don't want to take away from Jason or the injustice, and I'm not going to be silent." A cousin of Jason Walker told WREL News the police chief's description of events did not sound like something Jason Walker would do. "We're hearing one side of the story that sounds like a person that Jason is not, and then on the other side we're hearing a story that makes complete sense," said the cousin, who was not identified by name. "We have to take